Amanda Jaguer, I know you have approached this topic with a great seriousness of purpose, but I also know that from talking to you at the Shakespeare Theatre Association conference, the title of your book on its face feels counterintuitive.
Yes.
Shakespeare and Violence Prevention. You're telling me that the of plays that feature murder, dismemberment, regicide, and other torturous events, that guy can be used to teach us about violence prevention?
It's a great question.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 19th year, number 972, Shakespeare Prevents Violence? Amanda Jaguer is the director of outreach for Colorado Shakespeare Festival, and her research and work putting together touring productions of Shakespeare in schools has resulted in her fantastic new book, Shakespeare and Violence Prevention. Amanda was telling me about the work she's been doing for over a decade at Colorado Shakes, and I was very excited to continue the conversation and share it with you. Is the book really a series of examples of cautionary tales, or how did your work into this topic begin?
This is such a good question, Austin. I love also the way you're asking it with just like such love and humor. It's so good. So the plays offer us so many examples of essentially what not to do. Mm-hmm. We see some examples of pro-social relationships and certainly some, you know, healthy examples, but it wouldn't be good theater if it were all healthy behavior.
Very good point.
So the plays, I think, give us a springboard to sort of look at what happens in a climate when harm is perpetuated everywhere, or where violence is allowed to flourish. And a lot of what I've learned from violence prevention research is looking at the climate is key to preventing violence.
The climate, so, meaning the context of
times, the community, the air we breathe, the water we swim in, the sort of the overall the climate. And so
literally the climate. Got it.
Literally the climate. Yeah. Violence prevention experts talk about we need to examine school climates. And so what are the behaviors and the norms and the expectations that are set, you know, in terms of things like who's making eye contact? How are people being greeted in the morning? All of that builds the climate of a school.
Yeah.
But also a play is a little climate on its own, where we get to see the world of Verona, or we see what Elsinore is like, and we put that up on a stage and we all collectively get to watch it unfold. We're doing climate analysis when we're watching a play. And then of course the play is one part of the experience, but then how do we unpack what we just saw and relate it to our own world and relate it to our own problems with violence and our own understandings of violence. And it's not all violence too, the way we typically think of physical violence. Shakespeare gives us a lot of upstream examples of, you know, some of those more peer-to-peer conflicts, the mistreatment of Malvolio. Is it direct violence? Maybe not, but it's harm, and it's certainly bullying, and it's. So the plays, I think, give us a way to start thinking about violence in our time. Although we do sometimes joke internally, because sometimes actors will misspeak when they talk about the Shakespeare and Violence Prevention Program, that it's the we do Shakespeare prevention. And we're like, oh no, wait, we're not preventing Shakespeare. We're preventing violence through Shakespeare. So.
Well, I love it. I mean, because we have to read these plays anyway in school. So why not read them through this lens of modeling behavior or seeing behavior that is preventable? I love the example that you use of Malvolio, because I wrote about how we think Twelfth Night and Hamlet were written around the same time, and they are the opposite sides of the same coin of grief. where Hamlet's grief is private and everybody mocks him and says, get over it. And Viola's grief and Olivia's grief is shared, you know? Oh. And so their relationships are improved. And Malvolio's mistreatment needs to be balanced with an equal amount of asshole behavior on his part at the early, in the early going, and then the overreaction, which we see, and the characters acknowledge as an overreaction. I'm sorry, that was not a question so much as just me holding forth, and I apologize.
It's great. It's very cool. Very interesting.
But you worked with, it wasn't just you thinking this, hey, I got this idea. You know, you were working with the Center for the Study and Prevention of Violence. Am I right, at the University of Colorado there?
Yeah, that's right. We started a partnership with them 14 years ago. So the Colorado Shakespeare Festival, where I work, is part of the University of Colorado Boulder. And I was, you know, my colleague and I were just floating ideas about what play do we want to tour to schools this year? And we settled on Twelfth Night. And then we started thinking, do we want to perhaps incorporate a conversation about bullying, because the subplot of Malvolio really does mirror contemporary examples of bullying. And so I was connected with the Center for the Study and Prevention of Violence, and I went into a meeting half expecting them to say, yep, here's a fact sheet about what bullying is. Good luck. Mm-hmm. And they said, this sounds really interesting. We want to partner with you. We think that live theater could be a very interesting way of delivering our research as well. And so that was the birth of this collaboration. And we've since developed, I think we're about to develop our 10th title in this series.
Wow.
We're working on Hamlet next.
I say, there's a little bit of violence in there.
A little bit of mental health.
Yeah, quite a bit of mental health. Ideation and self-harm and I was thinking about this too, the to be or not to be speech. It's about life. It's about suicide. It's about life. But part of me was thinking the to be or not to be is about the futility of the idea that it's as easy as that simple binary choice.
Yes.
It's not.
Yes. Hamlet is such he's such a complex thinker.
Yeah.
My way into that play too is I'm thinking a lot about Hamlet as this young kid who comes home and everything's broken. And he feels it's on him to fix it. Oh, curse and spite, that I was born to set it right. Yeah. And I think a lot of young people today can relate to that concept of, I'm inheriting this really broken world, whether it's the climate or politics or whatever, that somehow the adults have broken things and it's all on us. And we know that when despair and isolation happens, that's where real harm and violence can occur.
So when you have these, when you're using these plays, and now I'm thinking of your relationship to Colorado Shakes, when you're using these plays to impart these ideas and these lessons in air quotes, are you working with the artists directing and producing the plays to say, oh, we want to direct this production, for instance, The Summer of Richard II or The Tempest, along the lines of addressing these issues? Or are the issues you're addressing from the scripts, from Shakespeare's plays, and they may or may not find their embodiment on stage?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. I supervise the hiring of all the directors we bring in to direct each of the touring shows. And I handle most of the cutting. I sometimes collaborate with my team here at CSF. And so the scripts already, they're abridged, but we essentially just cut them down to maybe 45 minutes, 30 minutes for elementary schools. And so they are cut in a way that has an eye towards the violence prevention lens.
Got it.
However, I have learned to be really clear with our directors that we don't expect this play to carry the weight of the violence prevention research. That in a sense, we have brought on this amazing team of directors and actors to tell a story, to tell a really engaging story, but we don't have to put pressure on the play to do any teaching or to give people any clear takeaways. And that's where the post-show conversation becomes really important, and the post-show activities where students are stepping into the action of the play. So I found that to be a very helpful guidepost in terms of freeing my directors up to be artists.
Hi, I'm Anne Curzan, author of the Kinder, Funner Usage Guide, Says Who, and co-host of the podcast, That's What They Say. And you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This fall of 2025, we'll be touring all the great books abridged at various venues we'll announce soon, and the ultimate Christmas show abridged in Washington State at the Edmonds Center for the Arts on December 3rd and the Capitol Theater in Yakima on December 12th. Sign up for our newsletter or check out the touring page at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. Now back to my conversation with Amanda Jaguer, talking about her new book, Shakespeare and Violence Prevention. To be clear, a lot of the performances that you're talking about are the performances of Shakespeare's plays that you adapt and send out into schools, not the main stage productions of Colorado Shakespeare Festival.
That's right, not the main stage. Yep. Yeah. So we're talking about the way we've developed the violence prevention work is all through taking it into schools in abridged versions.
And do you take these into adult communities as well, these performances, or is it mostly just teenagers and elementary school kids?
It is mostly schools, K-12 schools, but we have some time. We've typically in a regular tour year, we'll do one or two public performances. And those were really exciting because then we have multi-age levels, and then we typically do a post-show conversation about the violence prevention and how this is actually a concept that relates to everyone. It's one thing to reach young people with these messages about how to be an upstander, but also these are issues that relate directly to everyone in a society. And so I think empowering community members with this work is also really exciting and engaging. And I hope that the book makes it possible for other people who might be staging a production of Macbeth in a community to actually then just easily integrate some follow-up questions for their audiences, or maybe it might shift how they approach certain characters or how they depict the deaths on stage or things like that.
Yes, to be mindful of the ways in which these plays can be triggering in unexpected or unanticipated or unintentional ways.
Yeah, that's right.
Have you found certain plays to be more helpful to this work than others? And I suppose a follow-up question is, have you found plays that have been more helpful or more triggering than you expect?
Oh, yes. Certainly.
I love how your eyes widened, which my listeners won't see.
Yes. Amanda already has very wide eyes. They got bigger. Yeah, I'll start with the plays that work really well. Twelfth Night is just an ideal vehicle, especially for elementary audiences. So we tour that show for third, fourth, and fifth graders. Mm. It's such a great play to talk about the effects of bullying on a person and the pranking of Malvolio and the anonymous letter. It all relates to cyberbullying. Yeah. And these are all things that, believe it or not, fifth graders are learning about what cyberbullying is. And so that play works really well. Tempest is also great for young audiences because we've got magic and then we've got this focus on forgiveness. Prospero's shifting from vengeance to forgiveness. We've had a lot of fun with Romeo and Juliet with middle and high schools, Julius Caesar in terms of thinking about planned attacks. The two titles that have been most difficult, and I'm not sure about their effectiveness. I just have questions. I don't think they're bad titles to tour, but the ones that have sort of given me pause are, first of all, Taming of the Shrew. We haven't done that one in about almost 10 years.
Wow.
We did an all-female production. And I feel like if we were to do it again, I'd want to more intentionally partner with local experts in domestic violence and really bring in some outside expertise so we can fully equip the students experiencing it with all the resources available. So that one was just, you know, that's a play that is tough anyways.
Yeah.
And then the other difficult play, but really invited some rich conversation, was Merchant of Venice. Mm. And we toured that in 22 into 23. And that was right around the time, you know, we selected the title maybe a year in advance. And that was around the time there was this huge increase in anti-Semitism in you know, Kanye or Ye spouting off. And there was just a lot, there was a lot of intensity. There was a lot of public awareness of anti-Semitism. And that was certainly why we staged the play, is thinking about, let's look at the racism, the misogyny, and the anti-Semitism in the play and how that impacts the whole community of Venice. How does it impact the legal system? And, you know, in that production, we did some things where we interrupted the play so the actors got the opportunity to step outside of the play and comment on what was happening. All of those things I think are really important, but still, it's very hard to know what people are walking away with.
Yeah, I remember every so often at a STAW conference, the conversation will happen either in a bar or in an actual panel. Are there any plays of Shakespeare's you think should never be done again? And those are the two that always come up. And I will, off the record, because nobody listens to these things, Amanda, off the record, I'll say, yeah, we don't ever need to see Merchant of Venice again. It's not funny enough to warrant its inclusion. But I will argue for Taming of the Shrew.
Yeah, yeah.
Even shrews deserve love. Like my wife, for instance. Take my wife, please. And I notice you haven't mentioned Titus Andronicus.
It's funny. You know, Austin, that title comes up all the time as the perfect title to tour to elementary schools, but we have not yet. Yeah, I mean, I truly think, I don't imagine we will ever tour Titus to schools. But right. I think something that Shakespeare does in maybe all of the plays, Titus might be the one exception. I think I talk in the book about there may be one exception and it might be Titus. But I think in all of the plays, Shakespeare is asking questions about violence. And I talk about the instances of violence in the plays are always nestled in thought. So there is a moment before Macbeth murders anybody where he's thinking about it and he's unpacking his thoughts aloud for us. And I think that that nestling in thought is is kind of the way in. I think Titus might be the only exception, because does anyone stop and say, maybe I shouldn't do this?
No, you're right. But that is such a good point about how the violence, much of it is mindful and done in a conflicted manner, and you just wish the characters would make different choices.
And slow down. Yeah. Slow down, and yeah.
Even though some of these plays are 3 hours long, slow down.
Yes, do we really want them? Well, and I think that's the great thing that probably you and I love about watching a good Shakespeare play, is that when an actor is performing in a play and doing it well, they're in the moment and they're making it up on the spot, and we don't know how things are going to turn out. And I think approaching, you know, all acts of violence as if they were preventable, because they are. We know that violence is preventable, just like heart disease, and there are things we can do. And so I think there are also these natural overlaps between theater as a way of presenting information and art form, where we're invited to see that things have an alternative. There are other ways of being. There are other ways that, you know, it's not inevitable in Macbeth that anyone dies. And that's how we should feel watching the play. Maybe this time there will be peace.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. The paperback edition of Amanda Jaguer's new book, Shakespeare and Violence Prevention, is priced to move at $29 at all major bookstores. Buy when you can. It is for all markets. Then send us your valuable Shakespeare lessons via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com, or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespearians.com. Thanks, as always, to violence inventor Matthew Croke, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to David Bopke. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Anne Curzan, author of Says Who, a kinder, funner usage guide for everyone who cares about words, and the host of the NPR podcast That's What They Say. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 972 2916ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Is it for a general readership or more of an academic readership?
You know, this is something that is debatable, I think. I certainly wrote it for a general readership with an eye toward educators, people with an interest in teaching, and kind of intentionally not aimed at academics. But I think there's a lot in there that could be applying to, you know, anyone teaching in higher education and working with theater and Shakespeare and applied theater especially.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.